Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
And you are with Kaya Biz. I'm Sumitra Naidu. We continue now and we look at International Anti-Corruption Day, which is today. Corruption accounting for 59% of reported fraud cases in sub-Saharan Africa, significantly above the global average of 48%. It does not sit well. Now, as the world observes International Anti-Corruption Day, organizations face a host of challenges in the rapidly evolving modern era. A convergence of two seemingly distinct challenges is emerging: the rise of digital fraud and the underrepresentation of women in technology, issues that weaken organizational resilience and the diverse oversight needed to combat digital risks. Let's unpack all of this. Dr. Nishal Kushil, Head of Digital Forensics and AI at Forvis Mazar in South Africa, joins me now. A very good evening, Dr. Nishal. Thank you so much for your time.
Good evening, Sumitra. It's wonderful being here. Thank you for the invite. All things well.
Good. I'm looking at this. I mean, corruption still accounting for 59% of reported fraud cases in sub-Saharan Africa. This is significantly higher. That global average sitting at 48%. Why are we still at this level?
Great question. I think we have to look at our reality as a developing nation, just as a nutshell answer. It's quite a complicated, layered answer, but I'm going to hit straight to the heart of the matter. One of the things we have to be cognitive of is that our current landscape finds us in a position where the greater global criminal element has become more sophisticated. Attack techniques, the utilization of technology, indeed, even the utilization of artificial intelligence has reached a sophistication with the criminal element that is unprecedented compared to what we have seen. Now, marry that to the premise of our exposure as a developing nation, our knowledge base, our education that we have both at our grassroots level, as well as our general populace. At the end of the day, it is important for us to understand and acknowledge that that is a deficiency, because it gives us our focus areas that we need to work on in order to improve it. But to answer your questions directly, Milady Sumitra, we are sitting in a situation that education is important. The masses need to be aware of what can be exploitable on their side. Within the Africa region, we are also privy to a lot of scams. We are indeed victims to these scams. A lot of people in different demographics, and it's not certainly not just in isolated demographics, are exposed. Our elderly folk, our young children, and otherwise those of our populace which are not aware of the cybersecurity evolution and the cyber evolution which has happened.
I want to unpack that, because, you know, you talk about the fact that there's a need for education, but digital fraud is becoming so much smarter. I mean, you talk about cybercrime as well. You have very educated people that are still falling prey to some of these scams.
Indeed. I think that's a very astute observation. And Sumitra, you're not wrong. We are sitting in a situation where the criminal element that we had mentioned a little bit earlier on and its sophistication has reached a level that even exceeds your conventional education base. These sophisticated attacks, however, do have a bit of a premise. The premise in the sense that when we are talking about the lack of education, we're also talking about the lack of different types of attacks, the lack of social engineering awareness, for example, the lack of understanding how a phishing attack via the social engineering would occur. And I say this with all due respect to our reality and our socioeconomic position. We are an Ubuntu-based trusting nation, so it comes with the territory that within our developing nations, money exchange is not unheard of, in the sense of I would allow an exchange and I would trust other parties with my money. Unfortunately, we are in a position then of vulnerability. So it is both a cultural view that we need to take, in the sense of understanding what we are as a African reality, as well as understanding what we are exposed to in the sense of the global criminal element.
When you look, you know, I worked on a story on cybercrime, and I was exploring the ESET, you know, their biannual threat report. South Africa accounted for over 40% of all cybercrime. You're looking at ransomware attacks and info stealer incidents and how they're infiltrating. So you're not even looking at individuals, you're looking at big corporates. And South Africa seems to be sitting, is actually, in fact, at the top of this list. It is the hardest hit when it comes to these crimes.
Definitely. I think South Africa is in an interesting position when you look at our economic reality. We are somewhat of an African gateway insofar as economic movement, our GDP and the like is concerned. As a result, we would be a natural target with respect to the criminal element. It is as a factor of our positive view in the sense of being, in inverted commas, a gateway to Africa as it currently stands, as well as from an economic point of view, we are a target on the basis of the value and the lack of education and all of these other variables that mobilize criminal elements against us. To expound on what you had said, Sumitra, you're 100% right. Corporate entities daily have cybersecurity attacks against them. And at a breach, that's when it evolves into an actual forensics issue of now moving on to fraud and corruption and or otherwise. So cognitive of the cybersecurity landscape and cognitive views with respect to understanding where we need to be from our cultural and our reality as an African nation, as opposed to what we're exposed to. Very important, again, as we had said.
What are some of the blind spots here? Are things that we can actually... we can look at systems to improve cybersecurity, but what are the other organizational blind spots that we can take care of to actually manage this and prevent this kind of corruption from increasing?
Lovely. I think one of the things we need to acknowledge is that when it comes down to us understanding our governance and insofar as companies are concerned, we are all in a space where there's an evolution and it's a reactive space that we find ourselves in. When we have an event, we react to it. One of the strategies which we found is exceptionally well placed is the changing the narrative to make you a more proactive organization. Now, what does that mean? Governance around detection, governance around digital systems awareness and the pronouncement of understanding how we look for exploitations within that. The leadership culture being more aligned to understanding that we are and can be vulnerable within the cyberspace. Therefore, this is how we would articulate protection and defense against it. So when it comes down to your governance, ethics, policies, sure, and we're focusing on corporates here, that would be an angle. Another angle is I would go as to say that Cyber securitization needs to be holistic. What we have, and you would have taken note, the statistics show that if we are looking at a single element of, for example, and we did articulate women in technology, the reason around us articulating women in technology in the sense of the anti-corruption value proposition is that we see that this is important. We need to have an inclusive and a holistic view in the sense of how exploits would happen, who are the people within the system, and how the vulnerabilities can be uncovered and used by the criminal element. So inclusivity in creating a protective environment is very important. Blind spots emerge when decision-making lacks diversity, and that limits our ability to understand behavioral anomalies, which lead to systematic risks. So that could be one of the articulated important elements of policy. Your culture within an organization needs to be awareness. It's not good for a crisis to happen at the end of the day And when we reflect on us being reactive versus proactive, culture plays a very big part in that. And again, that segues into education.
How do we change that, though?
I think we have to be more cognitive as a people. When it comes down to having these high impact educational events, understanding what we have from, if you are a company or if you are an individual, going and educating yourself as to your exposure. For those who have the ability and the understanding with respect to how to protect themselves within the cyber domain, don't just stop there. It is our responsibility as guardians of our families, of the more vulnerable of society, to actually go forth and assist these individuals. What we've even done is within one of our SADC regions, we've constructed and we have developed a app-based detection or exploit detection notification mechanism that whenever in the region there is a breach, the breach is communicated, the nature of the breach is then informed, and everyone ascribed to the app gets awareness about, hey, I need to worry about this scheme, I need to worry about this exposure, I need to worry about this banking environment exploit or otherwise fintech exploit or whatever it may be. So I think awareness goes into the base that we have a responsibility as a holistic society to also create awareness. Those of us within the roles which have the ability to create the awareness also have a responsibility to move forward to protect those which are exposed and more vulnerable or less aware.
I'm wondering how the onset of new technology, and we look at AI, how is this transforming the current landscape? And in terms of these attacks and increased corruption, fraud, how then does that filter through to the systems? I mean, how big of a threat, I suppose?
Wonderful question. I think, Sumitra, to your credit, I cannot articulate the importance of understanding what this AI effect is going to have. Let's consider that artificial intelligence in itself is a field unto its own. But if you mesh the ability of AI to something like the cybercrime element, you can have both a protagonistic as well as an antagonistic utilization of this technology. It's true that artificial intelligence in its form is currently evolving, but at the rate of computation and ability and articulation that is unprecedented with any tool that humanity has at its disposal before. In a nutshell, AI used by a criminal will exponentially increase the ability of the criminal element. We're sitting with different platforms in the current day and age, which I won't mention, but I will say that are dedicated to the criminal element, where they can log into these platforms, put forward a prompt, and engineer an exploit of a cybersecurity breach nature. What does this mean? It means that even your conventional individual without coding knowledge can now move forward and code something of an exploit. But there is some light and there is a silver lining. As I had said, AI tool usage and AI ability usage is both protagonistic and antagonistic. I think this speaks to what we had said earlier, Good Sumitra, where AI in its utilization can be used as a tool for good. And those aligning on the basis of the defense of what is important to us, the defense of our nations, should utilize this valuable tool also as a very, very critical weapon in our arsenal for defense.
I don't know, Dr. Nishal, I'm feeling very afraid. I mean, it almost sounds like we've seen this all play out in one of these movies where they take over the systems and hold the entire place ransom. These are very real scenarios in today's world when we talk about how fast AI is coming.
Sumitra, you're not wrong there. These movies are amazing, and they have given us a societal view with respect to the sensationalism on artificial intelligence. And I take that with a little bit of a peppering in the sense that we have a proposition regarding the cognitive and the conscious ability of artificial intelligence against the humanity or the human condition, as well as we have the ability of humanity using AI for the benefit of its own and moving forward on that premise. I think at the end of the day, as much as these movies are sensationalizing the AI proposition and what could AI do for us in the future, or what we could be as victims of AI for the future, it's all about us. It's all about how we use this newfound technology and this in order to positively to acknowledge the human condition and the reality of where we are at. We both have the positive side of humanity.
Oh, we seem to be losing Dr. Nishal. That line was going down a little bit. Sorry. Dr. Nishal? Okay, we seem to have lost Dr. Nishal. We didn't get the end of the movie.
Mr. Mitra, are you able to receive me right now?
We're hearing you in bits and pieces, but let's just try.
Mitra, are you able to hear me now?
I can.
All right.
That sounds a little bit better. Sorry. We didn't hear the last bit of what you were saying. I was just saying that we didn't get the end of the movie.
All right. I think, Sumitra, acknowledging what you were saying and also acknowledging that when we are looking at the sensationalism that is AI, we have to consider that we, as a united people, we are the users of the tools around us. So it falls on us to decide how we use it. And hopefully we are in a space where we understand that this is an amazing tool. It can be used for the ill and for the benefit of humanity. So rallying together and understanding this proposition and using it to the benefit of humanity should be our move in the sense of anti-corruption, in the sense of the positive benefication, and in the sense of creating a better place for all.
I want to go back to talk about the cost. So there is a huge cost to this corruption, and it takes away from really important spending on other items, you know, on other aspects that you need to address. For instance, I mean, you know, like when you talk about cyber attacks and some of the state-owned entities in South Africa getting attacked as well. We had Transnet a few years ago, and they ask for a lot of money. You know, you need to pay over like $100 million. So there's not only the cost inside of your organization of having a breach, it's also the cost of the money that you need to pay over in order to fix the system. I mean, this just compounds, it adds up, and then it becomes a massive cost to a nation that's lying vulnerable and cannot afford to have this.
Sumitra, well articulated. I think as a developing nation, we have to be very, very aware that we need to protect what we have. You are right. When it comes down to corruption taking away from our fiscal capacity as a nation, that is a concern. And I think you have to look at it from the basis of corruption erodes both national trust and investment, as well as it erodes the ability of us to have the fiscal base that we need in order to progress our infrastructure. This kind of risk that we are exposed to, indeed, it does corrode public opinion. It weakens our taxation base. It inflates the cost of infrastructure. But what is at a point of departure with respect to that sentiment is that we have to acknowledge that it is important for us to be proactive and protective over our fiscus and over our assets. It goes back to what we were exploring earlier, Sumitra, where we were saying we need to educate ourselves. We need to be more proactive with respect to the protection, the detection, and the ability to see exploits before they actually occur. The issue here is that we're being reactive to issues. it is true that it's easier said than done, but I would rather position ourselves to spend a little on proactive measures as opposed to being totally exposed and exploited to an nth degree, as you had mentioned, on a socioeconomic and on a nation basis.
Let's leave it on that note. It was great chatting to you, Dr. Nishal. Thank you so much for your insights on this report. Dr. Nishal Kushiel, Head of Digital Forensics and AI at Forvis Mazar in South Africa.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.